wonder if God got a plan for everyone. I wonder if I could take a second run. 'Cause I carry on getting sad and getting stuck. What I wouldn't give for a life that doesn't suck. I'm a moving target.
Welcome back to another episode of the S3 podcast, episode 46, The Forgotten History of the World's First Trans Clinic. Before I get right into it, do make sure to follow us on Instagram at S3podcast_. Also follow me, if you would like to, at S3productions. So without further ado, let's get right into it. The first gender affirmation surgeries took place in the 1920s at a facility which employed transgender technicians and nurses, and which was headed by a gay Jewish man. The forgotten history of the Institute and its fall to Nazis bent on the euthanasia of homosexuals and transgender people offers us both hope and a cautionary tale. In the face of oppressive anti-trans legislation in the United States, this story begins late one night in Berlin, on the cusp of the 20th century. Magnus Hirschfeld, a young doctor recently finished with his military service, found a German soldier on his doorstep. Distraught and agitated, the young man had come to confess himself and earning a word used in Germany to refer to homosexual men. It explained the cover of darkness. To speak of such things was dangerous business. The infamous paragraph 175 in the German criminal code made homosexuality illegal. A man so accused could be stripped of his ranks and titles and imprisoned. Hirschfeld understood the soldier's plight. He was himself both homosexual and Jewish. He had toured Europe, watched the unfolding trial against Oscar Wilde, and written an anonymous pamphlet asking why the married man who seduces the governess remains free. While homosexual men in loving and consensual relationships, men like Oscar Wilde, were imprisoned, Hirschfeld did his best to comfort the man, but upon leaving his doctor, the soldier shot himself. It was the eve of his wedding, an event he could not face. And that, unfortunately, can happen. You know, the soldier bequeathed his private papers to Hirschfeld, along with a letter. The thought that you could contribute to a future when the German fatherland will think of us in more just terms, he wrote, sweetens the hour of death. Hirschfeld would be forever haunted by his needless loss. The soldier had called himself a curse, fit only to die, because the expectations of heterosexual norms, reinforced by marriage and law, made no room for his kind. These heartbreaking stories, Hirschfeld wrote, bring before us the whole tragedy in Germany. What fatherland did they have, and for what freedom were they fighting for? In the aftermath of this lonely death, Hirschfeld left his practice to specialise in sexual health and began a crusade for justice that would alter the course of queer history. Hirschfeld called his speciality sexual intermediaries. Included beneath this umbrella were what he considered situational and constitutional homosexuals, a recognition that there is often a spectrum and bisexual practice, as well as what he termed transvestites. This group did include those who wished to wear the clothes of the opposite sex, but also those who, from the point of view of their character, should be considered as the opposite sex. One soldier with whom Hirschfeld had worked described wearing women's clothing has the chance to be a human, at least for a moment. He likewise recognised that these people could be either homosexual or heterosexual, something that is still misunderstood about transgender people today. Perhaps even more surprising was Hirschfeld's inclusion of those with no fixed gender at all, akin to today's concept of gender fluid, or non-binary identity. He counted French novelists Georges Sand among them. Most importantly for Hirschfeld, these men and women were acting in accordance with their nature, not against it. Just bear with me 1 minute. If this seems like extremely forward-thinking for the time, it was possibly more forward-thinking than our own current anti-trans sentiments centre on the idea that transgender is both unnatural and new. In the wake of a UK court decision limiting trans rights and an editorial in The Economist argued that other countries should follow suit, and an editorial in The Observer praised the court for resisting a disturbing trend of children receiving medical treatments as part of a gender transition. But history bears witness to the plurality of gender and sexuality. Hirschfeld considered Socrates, Michelangelo and Shakespeare to be sexual intermediaries. He considered himself and his partner, Carl Geiss, to be the same. Hirschfeld's own predecessor, Richard Van Croft Ebing, had claimed in the 19th century that homosexuality was natural sexual variation, and Hirschfeld believed that a person was congenitally born that way. This was no trend or fad, but a recognition that people may be born with a nature contrary to their assigned gender, and in cases where the desire to live as the opposite sex was strong. Hirschfeld thought science ought to provide a means of transition. He purchased a Berlin villa in early 1919 and opened the Institute for Sexual Wissenschaft, Institute for Sexual Research, on July 6. By 1930, it would perform the first modern gender affirmation surgeries in the world. A place of safety. A corner building with wings to either side, the Institute was an architectural gem that blurred the line between professional and intimate living spaces. A journalist reported it could not be a hospital, for it was furnished, plush, and full of life everywhere. It stated purpose to be a place of research, teaching, healing and refuge that could free the individual from physical ailments, psychological afflictions and social deprivation. Hirschfeld's Institute would also be a place of education. While in medical school, he'd experienced the trauma of watching as a gay man was paraded naked before the class to be verbally abused as degenerate. At this institute, Hirschfeld would instead provide sex education and health clinics, advice on contraception and research on gender and sexuality, both anthropological and psychological. He worked tirelessly to try and overturn paragraph 175, managed to get legally accepted transvestite identity cards for his patients, and worked to normalise and legitimise homosexual and transitioning individuals. The grounds also included room for offices given over to feminist activists, as well as a printing house for sex reform journals meant to dispel myths about sexuality. Love, Hirschfeld said, is as varied as people are, which is true. The Institute would ultimately house an immense library on sexuality, gathered over many years and including rare books and diagrams and protocols for male to female surgical transition. In addition to psychiatrists, for therapy. He had hired Ludwig Levinlands, a gynecologist, and surgeon Erwin Gerbrandt. Together, they performed male-to-female surgery called genital remodeling, literally transformation of genitals. This occurred in stages: castration, penectomy, and vaginoplasty. The institute only treated men at this time. Female-to-male phalloplasty would not be practiced until 1949 by plastic surgeon Sir Harold Giles. Importantly, patients would also be prescribed hormone therapy, allowing them to grow natural breasts and softer features. Their groundbreaking studies, meticulously documented, drew international attention and international patients as well. Rights and recognition did not immediately follow. However, after surgery, some trans women had difficulty getting work to support themselves, and as a result, five became nurses at the institute itself. In this way, Hirschfield sought to provide a safe space for those whose altered bodies differed from the gender they were assigned at birth, including at times protection from the law. Lives worth living. That such an institute existed as early as 1919, recognising the plurality of gender identity and offering support, even through affirming surgery, comes as a surprise to many. It should have been the bedrock on which to build a bolder future. As this institute celebrated its first decade, the Nazi Party was already on the rise by 1932. It was the largest political party in Germany, holding more parliamentary seats and growing its numbers through a nationalism that targeted the immigrant, the disabled, the genetically unfit, weakened by economic crisis and without a majority. The Weimar Republic would collapse. Hitler was named Chancellor on January 30th, 1933, and would enact policies to rid Germany of Lebensraum, Leben, that is, lives unworthy of living, what began as a sterilisation programme, ultimately led to the extermination of millions of Jews, Gypsies, Soviets and Polish citizens, and homosexuals and transgender people. The Nazis came for the institute on May 10th, 1933. Hirschfield was out of the country. Karl Geiser fled with what he could carry. Everything else would perish by fire. The carnage would flicker over German newsreels. The first, but by no means last, of the Nazi book burnings from the building, carrying off a bronze bust of Hirschfield and all of his precious books. Nazi youth, women and soldiers took part. The footage and its voiceover declaring the German state had committed the intellectual garbage of the past to the flames. Soon a tower-like bonfire engulfed more than 20,000 books, some of them rare copies that helped to provide a historiography for non-conforming people. They could never be replaced. The Nazis also stole lists of clients, adding the names to pink lists from which to poach homosexuals for concentration camps. Levinlands, who like Hirschfield was Jewish, fled Germany to escape execution. But in a dark twist, his colleague Erwin Gerbrandt, with whom he had performed so many supportive operations, joined the Luftwaffe and would later contribute to grim experiments in a Dachau concentration camp. Hirschfield's likeness would be reproduced on Nazi propaganda as the worst of offenders, both Jewish and homosexual, all that the Nazis would stamp out in their bid to produce the perfect heteronormative Aryan race. In the immediate aftermath of the Nazi raid, Karl Geiss joined Hirschfield and his protege, Li Su Chong, a young medical student in Paris. The three would continue living together as partners and colleagues with the hopes of rebuilding things until the growing threat of Nazi occupation once more required them to flee. Hirschfeld died of a sudden stroke in 1935, while still on the run. Geiss committed suicide in 1938, and Hirschfeld's protege, Li Su Tong, would abandon his hopes of opening an institute in Hong Kong for a life of obscurity abroad. Their history had been effectively erased, so effectively, in fact, that though the newsreels did exist and the pictures of the burning library are often reproduced, few know they feature the world's first trans clinic. The Nazi deal had been based upon white, cishet, that is cisgender, and heterosexual masculinity, masquerading as genetic superiority. Any who strayed were considered as depraved, immoral, worthy of death. What began as a project of protecting German youth and raising healthy families had been turned under Hitler into a mechanism for genocide, a note for the future. The story of Hirschfeld's Institute at once inspires hope and pride for an LGBTQ+ history that might have been and could still be. It simultaneously sounds a warning to current legislation and indeed calls even to separate trans children from supportive parents. Bear striking resemblance to those terrible campaigns against so-labelled aberrant to those terrible campaigns lives. Studies have shown that supportive hormone therapy accessed at an early age lowers rates of suicide among trans youth. But there are those who, counter to Hirschfeld, refuse to believe that trans identity is something you can be born with. Richard Dawkins was recently stripped of his Humanist of the Year award for comments on comparing trans people to Rachel Dolezal, a civil rights activist who posed as a black woman. As though gender transition was a kind of duplicity, his comments come on the heels of yet more legislation in Florida banning transgender athletes from participating in sports, and an Arkansas bill denying transgender children and teens supportive care. The future doesn't always guarantee social progress. Hirschfeld's Institute for Sexual Research, with its trans supportive community of care, ought to have provided a firm platform to build a future that indeed thought of sexual intermediaries. In more just terms, but these pioneers and the heroic sacrifices help to provide a sense of hope and of history. For LGBTQ+ communities worldwide, may we learn the lessons of history, because where we go from here is up to us. And that is true. You know, I mean, I know there are obviously more important stuff going on in a minute with, you know, the vaccine, you know, the strings and, you know, everything else. But we do really need to take note of what's happening. And when you have places like Stonewall, who are blatantly, you know, trying to, you know, transition kids who clearly do not want it, want to be transitioned, and they are literally forcing kids, right? It's got to stop. And but also, on the counter of that, for people who genuinely want to transition, right, they should be able to have the support and the care that they need. But that will be it for today's episode. I hope that you have an amazing weekend. Stay safe. And I will, you know, be recording the next episode for Monday next week on Sunday. So until then, enjoy your weekend. Have fun. Stay safe. And thank you for joining, and see you later, guys. I wonder if God got a plan for everyone. I wonder if God got a plan for everyone.
Wonder if I could take a second run. Cause I carry on getting sad and getting stuck. What I wouldn't give for a life that doesn't suck. I'm a moving target.